Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everybody. Today, we may not like it, but the Obamacare health insurance exchanges are in some real trouble. One local example is Oscar Health Insurance. We will talk to the CEO of Oscar, Mario Schlosser, later this hour. We'll continue today this week's expanded edition of our 30 Issues election series, Issue 23, Facing Whiteness. And we will look specifically at Clinton and Trump positions and statements on whiteness coming up later today. Also, on the Clinton Foundation, emails released recently show that donors often got access, as you know. And Donna Shalala, president of the Clinton Foundation, went on CNN this morning and said the organization will have to be restructured to avoid conflicts of interest if Hillary Clinton is elected president. And we will talk about that. But New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, to start out, has also been inserting himself into the presidential race. He announced yesterday that his office, or I should say Tuesday, that his office is investigating Donald Trump's nonprofit foundation for a litany of possible crimes, most notably a political donation it made in support of the Florida Attorney General, Pam Bondi. Trump's campaign has accused Schneiderman, who is a Hillary Clinton supporter, and as part of her leadership council in New York State, of being a partisan hack. Bolstering this claim is a report from Scripps News Service late last week that reported that the AG, quote, has the power to force the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Health Access Initiative to publicly disclose gifts from individual foreign governments, but Schneiderman isn't pursuing this course of action. Joining me now to untangle the Trump investigation as best we can and the lack thereof in the case of Hillary Clinton is Kevin Sack, investigative reporter for The New York Times. Kevin, thanks so much for doing this with us. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. It's good to be with you.
I want to begin with a clip from Schneiderman during his appearance on CBS This Morning yesterday, in which he responds to the Trump campaign's accusation that he's a partisan hack by pointing out that the investigation into Trump started in June of last year before anyone knew he would become the Republican nominee.
We started communications with them back in June. We didn't have a press conference, didn't have a press release. We didn't try and grandstand on this because there were allegations that they'd made contributions to political committees, which is illegal. There have been allegations that they made contributions to charities that now say they've never received the money. Mm-hmm. So as with any of the other thousands of nonprofits we regulate, we have been making inquiries and having, I have to say, had very professional correspondence with Trump's lawyers or Trump Foundation's lawyers about these problems.
Eric Schneiderman on CBS yesterday. So, Kevin, take us on two tracks here. Tell us what it is that the Attorney General is investigating and give us the kind of pros and cons as far as you can unpack them of what makes this political or what makes this a legitimate criminal investigation.
Well, it's not totally clear what he's investigating because, like most investigations, that's not revealed until there's some sort of formal action. What it would appear from documents we received this week from the Attorney General's office is that the investigation into the Trump Foundation largely has to do with a contribution that the foundation made to Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi's Political Action Committee. It's a committee that was set up to support her 2014 reelection campaign in Florida called Injustice for All. Trump made a $25,000 contribution to that committee in 2013, September of 2013. And obviously, contributions from nonprofit foundations to political entities violate Internal Revenue Service tax laws. When that arose, questions arose about that earlier this year. Trump was forced to refund the foundation $25,000 from his personal accounts and also to pay a $2,500 penalty to the IRS. And this whole situation sort of tracks a separate inquiry that the Attorney General has into Trump and this contribution, because the contribution arrived slightly, the contribution arrived 4 days after the first disclosure, first public disclosure in news reports in Florida newspapers that Bondi's office was watching or at least examining a lawsuit that he had, that Schneiderman had just filed in New York about Trump University and fraud allegations against Trump University.
So let me linger on that point for a minute to help me and the listeners understand it.
Yep.
The Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman, in 2013 already had a state of New York lawsuit against Trump University. The Attorney General of Florida was looking at that and considering joining the lawsuit or bringing a similar lawsuit. 4 days after that was disclosed in the press, the Trump Foundation made a $25,000 donation to that Attorney General's Political Action Committee. Do I have that right so far?
More or less. You may have slightly overstated one point, and let me sort of walk you through the timeline because it is very complicated, and the story that my colleague Steve Eder and I have in today's Times found a one new piece of information that shed some new light on all this and sort of at least partly undercuts the timeline that all of this has been based on.
Mm-hmm.
On August 25th, 2013, Schneiderman announced his litigation against Trump and Trump University. As you and your listeners know, there have been many, many complaints all over the country by consumers of this, this so-called university. It's really a for-profit program that offered people seminars and wealth building and real estate tactics and things like that. Lots of claims of fraud, people not getting what they paid for, huge amounts paid, people having to dig into savings to pay for it, high-pressure tactics. Schneiderman files this litigation on August 25th. 3 years ago, thanks to reporting in the Florida newspapers, this narrative was created because on September 13th, the Orlando Sentinel writes the first story about whether or not Florida's Attorney General Pam Bondi, who, like Trump, is a Republican, might be considering some sort of action of her own. The slight distinction I would draw with what you said is that they don't quite, the Attorney General's office in Florida didn't quite say that they were thinking about joining the New York litigation or filing its own case.
Mm-hmm.
They only said that they were examining New York's, the allegations in the New York case. They did not go the next
okay.
step to say what they might do with it. The story in the Orlando Sentinel, however, did, rightly or wrongly, did suggest that they might be looking to join the case, thereby giving anybody who read it, including Trump or his people, some reason for concern. And then 4 days later, this check lands for $25,000 in Bondi's Political Action Committee. And a month after that, Bondi's office announces that they're not going to pursue the allegations against Trump University. So there's this sort of very simple, easy-to-understand narrative that suggests a possible quid pro quo at that point. Trump's people see this story in the Orlando Sentinel. 4 days later, a check lands, big check lands. And a month after that, the any possibility of an investigation is dropped. What we found this week was a copy of the actual check that Trump sent to Bondi. And, in fact, it's dated 4 days before the Sentinel story arrived, not 4 days after the Sentinel story arrived.
Uh-huh.
So
that exonerates Trump a little bit in a certain respect?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word exonerate. I think that goes too far. Because there obviously are other possible explanations that could still be somewhat nefarious. Among them, checks can be backdated, obviously. Trump knew even before the New York litigation was filed that there had been complaints from Florida consumers filed with the Florida Attorney General's office. So it always could have been a preemptive kind of investment.
He didn't need to read it in the Orlando Sun Sentinel.
He didn't know that
this was going on. He was being looked at by the Florida Attorney General's office.
He didn't necessarily have to. The assumption has always been that it was that story in the Sentinel, which again sort of went the extra mile in saying that her office was looking at the possibility of joining New York's lawsuit, that caused him the most concern. But there are certainly other explanations, and one other possible explanation is that the first calls from the Sentinel to Bondi's office came in on August 29th, which is 10 days before Trump presumably dated and signed this check. So you could also see a scenario in which these calls come in, Bondi gets wind of them, and notifies Trump, and he then writes the check. All that said, Bondi's office has released over 8,000 pages of documents, mostly emails, after organizations, including ours, have made open records requests for them, all their documentation having to do with anything they were looking at relative to Trump. And there's really no indication in those emails, at least, that she personally had any knowledge of these Trump complaints before the Orlando Sentinel story broke. And I was in Tallahassee doing some reporting on this and found that it wouldn't be that unusual for her or even her top aides to not know about complaints of this level. Her predecessor had received about 23 complaints against Trump University and a related entity called Trump Institute. There had only been one complaint received after Bondi took office in 2011. And this is an office that receives scores of thousands of consumer complaints a year and has to do a lot of triage to decide which ones proceed to the level of an investigation. It's really only at that point that the Attorney General finds out about them and has any awareness of them.
But she would have known about it once it hit the Orlando newspaper, and then she would have known about the Trump $25,000 donation to her political action committee. But in order for there to be any kind of criminal charges that Eric Schneiderman could bring, there would have to be some kind of evidence that she acted because of the or decided not to act against Trump University because of this $25,000 donation, as opposed to, for any other reason, having to do with her own judgment of the merits of the case or anything else, right?
Exactly. And to date, there's no direct evidence of that. And obviously, both she and Trump assert that there was no quid pro quo. They both say that the Trump University matter never came up in conversations between them. She did call him and solicit this contribution, although her aides and his aides have declined to say exactly when that call was made.
Listeners, any questions for New York Times investigative reporter Kevin Sack on his investigation or his reporting on Eric Schneiderman's investigation of the Trump Foundation donation to the Florida Attorney General's Political Action Committee and her looking at Trump University, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Let me ask you about the Trump Foundation making a political contribution in the first place. There's been so much focus on the Clinton Foundation and the many questions that people are discussing about it. Now various kinds of media scrutiny are starting to come to the Trump Foundation. And I wonder about this in particular. Would a charitable foundation be allowed to or typically make a political contribution of any kind?
Absolutely not. It's prohibited by federal law, which is why he was forced to reimburse the foundation from his own funds earlier this year and pay a penalty. And the Trump organizations and the foundation's explanation for this is that it was all inadvertent. It was a staff error. It's sort of a very complicated line of events that has to do at least partly with the fact that there are other organizations around the country that are charitable with the exact same name as Bondi's political committee. And the assertion is that a staffer of some kind, they haven't said who precisely, got confused when the instructions came down to write a check to Injustice for All is the name of the committee, and, you know, looked up Injustice for All in some sort of, register of nonprofits and found the wrong one, and was intending, therefore, to make the contribution to an unrelated nonprofit rather than the political committee for Pam Bondi.
We hear about a lot of mistakes through the Trump campaign. We had the segment the other week about him getting a tax deduction in New York State for the STAR property tax credit program that's only supposed to be available to people making $500,000 a year or less. And the Trump folks said, oh, that was a mistake. And now here's another mistake, quote unquote. But I guess another context for this here is Trump running, especially in the primaries, saying he would be clean because he's free of political contributions. And he knows this so well because he's been on the other side of it.
Right.
He's bought politicians throughout his career and had them in his pocket. He even said he had Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton to some degree.
Exactly.
And now he's trying to say, this donation to Pam Bondi at that time that she was starting to look at Trump University, or her office was starting to look at Trump University, no relationship.
That's exactly the right context here, and that's really the starting point for all of these stories, right? I mean, he has said repeatedly and brazenly, sometimes crassly, throughout the campaign that he made, huge numbers of contributions over a 20-year period to politicians of all types and parties, and that he did so explicitly to buy influence. Now, he's done this for a couple of reasons. One, it feeds into his theme of government being corrupt, and, he's the only one that can clean it up because he can't be bought. But it also was needed, particularly during the primaries, as a way to explain away his contributions to Clinton and Democrats. So this was the tact he took. It's, yes, I spend on all of them because when I do, I get what I want. Now he's, in this case, in the Bondi case, he's saying that she's the exception to that rule.
Right.
He didn't attempt to buy her off.
And from a criminal investigation standpoint, if the Attorney General of New York were to ever bring charges against Trump or the Trump Foundation in connection with this, there's some circumstantial evidence of intent. You would have to prove intent to bribe the Attorney General of Florida. And we've got at least the background of general intent to buy politicians. That doesn't mean he's got a case.
Right.
But it's interesting.
The only thing that he might, or one of the things he can say to counter that is that she certainly was not the only Florida politician that he contributed to.
Right.
In fact, we did some calculations and found that over this 20-year period, he's given more or less $375,000 to candidates and political committees of various types in Florida. He obviously, as he says on a regular basis, considers Florida a second home because of his Mar-a-Lago club in Palm Beach. So he and Bondi apparently have had some sort of relationship for a while, although we asked both of them or their staffs to tell us a bit about that relationship and how it got started, and no one agreed to do so other than to say that it's a real friendship and that it's gone on for a while, but we don't know the real origins of it.
So at the same time, there is this Scripps report late last week that Schneiderman has the power to force the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Health Access Initiative to publicly disclose gifts to them from individuals in foreign governments. But Schneiderman is not pursuing this course of action. And here's another clip of Schneiderman from CBS This Morning yesterday, in which he answers a question about why he's not investigating that with respect to the Clinton Foundation.
The issue that's been raised there is why they haven't been required to disclose donations from foreign governments. And the answer is very simply that the New York State Attorney General's office has never asked any nonprofit to disclose contributions from foreign governments. Historically in New York, the concern was with expenditures of New York State and local governments of New York State funds, concerns about graft and corruption working through nonprofits. So the Doctors Without Borders, the Carter Library, others that may receive money from foreign governments, we've never asked anyone to disclose contributions of foreign governments. To single out the Clinton Foundation would be grossly unfair and say we're changing the rules for this one foundation in the middle of the game.
Kevin, this is not the story you've been reporting, but you are following Eric Schneiderman investigating one presidential candidate. What do you make of Schneiderman's explanation there, if anything?
You know, Brian, I haven't been reporting that story, and because of that, I just don't feel qualified to talk about it. It's just beyond my expertise, and I don't want to step into anything that I'm just not familiar enough with to talk about.
What about Schneiderman himself and his general positioning of himself with respect to even the Trump campaign? If you've looked into that while you're investigating this particular issue, do you find evidence, or are you not looking at it, that he's acting in a political way?
Well, obviously, that's Trump's assertion, is that he's found a high-profile case that can advance his own political interests. One thing that's very interesting is that Schneiderman himself is a significant recipient of Trump's political largesse. He himself, I believe the number is, received $12,500 in contributions from Trump at some point.
So he could say, I'm no Pam Bondi, or he could also say, we could look at it and say, well, he wasn't going to get any more Trump money at any time in the future anyway, now that Trump is the Republican presidential nominee.
One other thing I would add that on the Trump Bondi issue, and I know she's not your main focus here, but her role is maybe, you know, as questionable as Trump's is in all this, in that she did accept this $25,000 contribution from Trump even after discovering that her office was at least examining the New York allegations. And furthermore, 6 months after the investigation was, or not the investigation, 6 months after her office declared that they were not going to pursue anything against Trump University, she allowed him to hold a fundraiser for her at Mar-a-Lago, $3,000 a head. He was there, and by our count, it raised about $50,000 or more. And she has declined to, including to us, to explain why she would have taken that money under the circumstances.
So does the evidence that you're finding in your investigative reporting indicate that Schneiderman has something new here that could lead him to start his own investigation of Trump at this time? Or do we conclude that he knew all this and he's just coming out with a September surprise, if you will, in the context of the presidential race? You know what I mean? I'm asking, really, is there anything new here that would lead Schneiderman to announce this investigation at this time?
Well, it's a hard question to answer without knowing the fullness of what he has, which we don't, in fact, know. All I can say is that this is one of those stories, and particularly the part concerning the Trump Foundation and its role, that has trickled out over literally a three-year period. It only became known publicly that Trump had repaid the foundation with his own funds and paid this penalty. The first news reports of that occurred only a couple of weeks ago. Now, whether he had knowledge of it long before then and could have acted on it before it arose in the public eye, I can't say. But I would assume, and it's only an assumption, that the timing of his action had more to do with these first public reports, many of which were in the Washington Post earlier this month.
Robert in Manhattan Valley, you're on WNYC with New York Times investigative reporter Kevin Sack. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Brian. Two questions. First, is the reporter aware of the Washington Post's series of articles, I guess over the last 7 to 10 days, in which they have examined, and I thought they were examining public records, so things that the IRS or other filings might have yielded, which is broader than just the Bondi caper, but a range of different contributions, monies not being received by the charities, things of that sort, which show what you were referring to before, Brian, as a pattern of conduct. It doesn't mean it's anything more than sloppiness. It doesn't mean necessarily that there are other things, but it was sort of a comprehensive review of public record type of documents. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, the New York Times did a fairly interesting article using a litigation analysis outfit, tracing public filings about, I guess, limited liability companies and real estate matters. And so I'm wondering if in the area of thinking about the Panama Papers, whether the investigative reporters are examining those type of public records and then through sources trying to analyze the interrelationships between international companies and investors and governments with Trump, mm-hmm. partnership properties, investments,
right.
licenses, etc.
Robert, thank you very much. That's a couple of very complicated questions.
I can't really speak to the second one. On the first one, yes, obviously we're very aware of the Post reporting, which has been excellent on this issue. And I'm sure that is at least partly what Schneiderman's going to be looking into and going back to the timing, perhaps, you know, there was simply a critical mass that was created that made him decide that it was time to take a deeper look. I was focusing in on the Bondi contribution from the foundation, partly because it's the topic of my own reporting, but also because when we filed an open records request with Schneiderman's office for documentation related to his investigation of Trump, most of what we got back, almost all of what we got back, had to do with this Bondi
right.
contribution.
Okay.
And so, you know, the conclusion we drew was that seemed to be the focus, at least at that time. That, of course, doesn't mean that the focus can't expand.
And on his second question about international ties, I realize it's not your story, but there's been so much questioning of Hillary Clinton's relationships with foreign entities, foreign governments and foreign individuals because of donations to the Clinton Foundation. It's coming out increasingly that Trump has a lot of international business ties. And so one can at least ask the question, if she's got foreign influences that have access to her or that, you know, relationships with her, what about foreign entities that have mm-hmm. relationships with him because of the business that he's done in many, many countries in the world?
And I certainly agree that it's a ripe area, and particularly having to do with his involvement in China and his relationships with Russia.
One more call. Ken in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Real quick, we're almost out of time.
I wanted to congratulate Mr. Sack by coming up with really exculpatory information for Trump. It's incriminatory at a certain meta level, right? I mean, Trump wants to say that the Times is always out to smear him. Well, you know, you've given him the lie, in a sense. That's all.
Glad you read the story.
Thanks. Well, he's saying your story, to some degree, lets him off the hook.
Well, I don't think that's the case. And the story is worded very specifically to demonstrate that it's not the case. What the story says is that this timeline that has been sort of the root of this three-year discussion about Trump and Bondi wasn't really complete. There was, you know, there was a piece of information that we didn't have. And I think, you know, had people known originally when the check was dated, that narrative might have been somewhat different. But as I said at the top of the interview, there are certainly other explanations for how he could have known about any interest in Bondi's office in Trump University even before the Orlando Sentinel story came out.
Kevin Sack, New York Times investigative reporter, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And I will say, listeners, that we also invited the Scripps News reporter who was on the Attorney General Eric Schneiderman and Clinton Foundation story, and he couldn't make it today, but we will have him on a subsequent day. Scripps News first put out the story about Schneiderman ignoring the Clinton Foundation's wrongdoing and or a possible wrongdoing, possible enough to at least look into, and said in that story that New York State law and instructions from the Attorney General's office requires nonprofits to list government agencies' gifts, but year after year, the Clinton charities have ignored New York law. We will have that Scripps News reporter on a subsequent show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the Obamacare health insurance exchanges are in some real trouble. We'll talk to the CEO of one local insurance company, Oscar, and health insurance expert, Elizabeth Benjamin. Stay with us.